Because you're doing good.
All right, see? They play. Boy, who do I hand this to? Mr. Rosenwald. I'm sorry. I shouldn't know. Thank you.
All right, Union 1, I'm going to start this meeting at 5:30. Go through several announcements before we start. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into this Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all your devices until you are ready to speak. And make sure your cameras are on and you are unmuted. When you are done with your item, please remute and turn off your camera. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda during item two. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in this agenda may do so at the time each item is considered. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it's your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. And reminder to the public that are attending in person to complete the common cards. Thank you for that one. For tonight's meeting, we will proceed as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration, either action or consent. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. I would like to note that all committees are in attendance. All committee members are in attendance. Director Bronstein, Director Kelly, President Martin, Director Planbeck, and myself as chair. All right, so starting with item number one, we'll do our Pledge of Allegiance, and I'll ask Director Kelly to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
Director Kelly.
Hand over your heart or salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Be seated. Before we continue, I'd like to note that Vice President Jerry Gladbeck was the chair of this committee, and we will adjourn today in his memory. In addition, I have received yesterday a statement from one of our elected local officials. This testimonial about Jerry was not able to make it on Tuesday, so I will read it for everyone right now. Quote, "The news that Jerry was gone was shocking at the least. I had just spoken with him several weeks ago. I knew Jerry for many years, as did many of you. He loved this community. He loved working with his colleagues. He worked hard and tirelessly for years to make sure we got good, clean water for our families and community. I was blessed to know him. Our hearts and prayers go out to his wife and his family. He will be missed. Joe Messina, Governing Board President of William S. Hart Union High School District." Okay, we will move on to our public comment. We will ask for public comments, and then we've got one from Colin Altmeyer. Mr. Altmeyer?
It's on a particular item.
What's on an item?
Yes, you see the item.
Okay, I see it. People know. Okay. Do you have any comments that are unrelated to any agenda items that you wish to comment on? No? Does any member that joined us virtually have any comments on any agenda that's any agenda items that's not on the agenda?
There is none.
Okay. All right, so let's move to item number 3, legislative consultant report. We'll start with item 3.1, presented by Jeff Bowman from VSA. Jeff, go ahead.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. In addition to my written report, a couple of important data points. Congress has begun passing the FY 2023 appropriations bills. They have to enact 12 bills every year before the end of the fiscal year. For us, the end of the fiscal year is September the 30th. So this week, important reference points for SCV Water. We saw a package of 6 mostly domestic appropriations bills passed the House yesterday. The agriculture bill, the interior EPA bill, and the energy and water bill, 3 bills really important to SCV Water, were part of that package. The bill passed 220-207. So 6 of the 12 bills have passed the House. The remaining bills are a little bit iffy at the moment. But again, we anticipate these 6, those will head to the Senate. Uncertain future there. But in terms of the bills that are important to us, the agriculture bill, because that has funding for the Natural Resources Conservation Service. There's been a bit of a switch. On my last call, I talked about the agriculture spending bill funding the United States Forest Service, but I'll get to that in a minute. We also have the energy and water bill, part of that package that funds the Bureau of Reclamation and the Army Corps of Engineers. And lastly, part of that 6 bill package includes the interior EPA bill, which includes funding for the other Department of the Interior agencies like the Park Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, and the APA side funds the Environmental Protection Agency. The House Republicans have been voting against the bills due to the partisan process that was used to develop the subcommittee allocations. They're not voting against them because of the substance. They're voting against the bills because of sort of a lack of parity. They want to see parity in terms of defense spending and domestic spending. So I think they'll get there on the parity issue, but I think it'll take a House and Senate agreement to get there. So I mentioned earlier the Natural Resources Conservation Service. So back in March, we filed a couple of what are called community project funding requests in the House with Congressman Garcia. One of those was for Arundo removal. The other was for restoration of the Bouquet Canyon Creek project. And we thought this was a great fit for the United States Forest Service. When Congressman Garcia engaged the Appropriations Committee, they explained to him that it would probably be a better fit for the Natural Resources Conservation Service. So in that bill package that passed the House yesterday, there is a $300,000 earmark for work to be done at Bouquet Canyon Creek. So with the bill now being done on the House side, the House now has an official position supporting this funding for us. Again, kudos to Congressman Garcia. House members could only make a limited amount of earmark requests. They could only make up to 15 requests. So very thankful that, first of all, we were one of the 15 and then got across the finish line in the House process. The Senate process is a little uncertain right now for FY 2023. We think the Senate will make their bills public maybe as early as next week, but we won't know the status of our congressionally directed spending requests until we see the Senate bills. Both senators have been supportive of our Arundo removal request, but only Senator Padilla requested funds for Bouquet Canyon. Again, just because they make the request does not mean the funding will be included in the bills, but we'll know more next week. After yesterday's work in the House, I plan on alerting the senators, Senate offices, to this $300,000 earmark. I think this is all headed towards what we call a continuing resolution in September. That's used to kind of extend the fiscal year beyond September the 30th. I think they'll do a continuing resolution through the May 8th election. At this point, we'll probably see a final package of appropriations bills to the president before the end of the calendar year, but Congress does have some work ahead of them. This is the new normal for us in Washington, D.C. Again, I mentioned the 12 appropriations bills. Really neat trivia question if anybody ever asks you, when was the last time Congress enacted all 12 bills on time? That was in 1996. So this is the new normal. This is no different. This is kind of what we're used to in Washington, D.C. The second data point is the Water Resources Development Act. So this is legislation that's enacted every 2 years to authorize projects and programs for the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Their programs are not a great fit for SCV Water, but we had a big win in the House and in the House of Representatives in June when they passed their bill. The Corps of Engineers typically carries out large projects for navigation, flood control, and aquatic ecosystem restoration. However, they do have the authority to carry out smaller, what I call environmental infrastructure projects, but these have to be authorized in law. These projects are not really affiliated with the three main missions that I mentioned earlier, but they can be used for things like water treatment projects, distribution, transmission, stormwater management, other interior drainage work, things like that. They're typically small. We usually only see sponsors receiving anywhere from $1 million to $5 million annually for this work. The WERDA bill in the House includes 100 of these new environmental infrastructure activities. And included in that, in the House version, is a $100 million authority for Los Angeles County that lists Santa Clarita Valley Water as an eligible sponsor of this work. Again, this doesn't guarantee anything. We still have to chase the funding, but we're now authorized if the House bill becomes law. The Senate passed their version through committee in April, but there hasn't been any action since. We're hearing the Senate may try to bring their bill to the floor before the senators go home in August. But even if they are able to pass a bill, I think it'll take several months to negotiate the final package. So like the FY 2023 process, I think WERDA gets completed after the November 8 elections. And then lastly, another activity that we carried out after we sent the memo to you guys was that we worked on a letter to the senators related to the to Section 220 of the Clean Water Act. This is a program that was authorized a couple of decades ago, but never received any funding for Congress. The program is to provide grants for alternative water source projects. And the House this time around actually got around to funding the program in the EPA interior legislation. Our letter encouraged the senators to support funding for the program, and we got a positive response from both of the senators when we sent the letter. It's not a particularly large amount of money in the House bill. It's $10 million nationwide. We're asking the senators to increase that. It's authorized at $25 million a year. But again, it's nice to finally kick the door down on Section 220. And that may be a future opportunity for SCV Water to consider when they're seeking grants, in addition to the work that we do with the Bureau, other programs at EPA with the SRFs, are now our new best friends at the Natural Resources Conservation Service and the United States Army Corps of Engineers. So with that, I'll close. And thank you very much for letting me join you tonight, and happy to answer any questions you guys have for me.
Right. Are there any public comments? Actually, we do have a public comment. Ms. Noltmeyer?
I'm particularly talking about PFAS. Is the appropriate time right now to talk
Section
about
3.1, yes.
It is?
Yeah.
Yes. I refer to your own item that you have in here. This is one thing that I have been on very groups for years, talking about PFAS and how bad it is. And they finally, and I agree with them, with their saying here, let me see if I can find it. About the health problems. If you've read this, oh, here it is. It said, you know, this is the PFAS chemicals in drinking water. And if you read it, the absolute warning that concentrations of PFAS chemicals found in drinking water may pose health threats even at levels near zero. That gives you a good idea that there any water well that has PFAS in it should be shut down immediately. I would like to see once the water company act in the interest of the health of the people they're drinking it. We don't drink your water. We haven't for years. I don't cook anything with your water. And I don't know what better explanation can we get that even with treatment, it is still a threat. They can't bring it down to near zero. And you're serving this to children, putting it with their formulas. I don't know what we're going to have to do to make this water company. And now you actually have taken over the one area that we have always felt created PFAS. And now you said, oh, we got this big amount of money. And just recently you did this. And I lost a lot of sleep that night when I saw that you took money and you're going to, so it's up to you now, totally. Because you took the big money to come up with a solution or shut down every well that has PFAS in it. Every well. And if you can't do that, then you're not meeting the health standards for anybody drinking your water. It's kind of writing right here. Now, I know I'm putting a lot on you after we've gone through a very shocking thing.
Time's up. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hoffmeyer. Time's up.
Thank you.
Just concern this.
Message.
Public health goals, MCLs, response levels were addressed on our Tuesday's board meeting, the one you attended. But just for the sake of whoever's in attendance, Mr. Cole, can you just quickly go over the difference between public health goals, this statement on page 2 of our board packet, and response levels as required by California for PFAS?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Olbrowski. I think we had a really robust presentation the other night at the board meeting that walked through kind of the regulatory construct of how regulations are set, and those are what our water agency is subject to adhering to. So on chemicals such as PFAS, that the technical term of those are emerging contaminants that are just now being tested for and sampled for, and the regulatory process is just beginning for those. So there's a kind of a step through process of how those regulations are set. Depending if you're at the federal level or the state level, there's different terminologies for those. Both revolve generally around what's called a goal. At the federal level, it's a maximum contaminant level goal. At the state level, it's a public health goal. There are kind of quicker steps in the regulatory process that are identified. In the state of California, those are known as notification levels and response levels. And so currently, that is the regulatory framework that the water agency is responsible for adhering to, and we are doing that. So any well that has exceeded a response level has been removed from the service in the community.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cole. Saying, are there any questions from virtual public?
There is none.
All right. I'll open up now to the committee members. Director Planbeck.
Jeff, you said right at the end that there was going to be money for, it sounded like watershed projects or natural water. What did you say right at the end? I think I didn't understand it.
Alternative water source projects.
Yeah. Oh, then what is that?
So that could be water recycling projects. That could be probably not desalination, which you guys don't have much of anyway. It's kind of beauties in the eye of the beholder of this program. I'll have to get you more details. I don't have my, unfortunately, I used to know this off the top of my head, but again, it's water reuse, water recycling projects.
And stormwater capture, anything like that?
I don't want to go out on a limb until I actually look at the compilation of laws, but I'll get you an answer either later tonight or tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Any other committee members? President Martin?
I don't have a question, Jeff, but good to see you again.
You too, sir.
Thanks for all the good work you're doing back there. And I look forward to hearing some more affirmative results going forward.
Thank you, President Martin. Director Bonstein?
Hi, Mr. Bowman. It's nice to meet you. Being new on the board, on this agency, on this committee, I have a few questions just to help me navigate a little bit better, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
First of all, if you ever have any additional links or information that you can throw in here, that would be great. I mean, this was really good. I made a lot of notes on it already. But if there's any extra information for me to help me educate myself, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
The other thing is there a way, do these bills, when they have like a code, right? When they pass or don't pass, right? The energy bill, or I would like the code for them so I could look up what was passed.
Oh, I think the bill number. Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, we will do that once the bill was packed, the six bills were packaged together last week, and we didn't have a bill number until Monday of this week. So we'll include that and the links in our next write-up for you.
Okay, good, because I was trying to find them online and I wasn't sure which one was which. So that can help me a lot too.
There's about a 2 week lag in terms of when we file our written report with you and when I give the verbal, and then we try to circle back with, you know, sort of, I try not to repeat what I verbally said, but try to get you more information like that. So we'll be sure to include that in the next memo.
Okay. And then, I'm very thankful to, Representative Garcia for adding that funding, but I wanted to know how he voted on it. Did he actually vote for that funding, or did he vote against that?
So he voted against the bill in committee, and he voted against the bill on the floor.
Okay.
And again, the Republicans are lining up against the bills because of the lack of parity. It's not because the individual bills that they're against them substantively. It's because of the lack of parity between the domestic spending and the defense spending. They want that to be even. And right now the domestic spending is outpacing the defense spending.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm just, you know, it's like being grateful on one hand for putting that in there, because I didn't know that they only get 15 requests. So that's awesome. I'm glad that we're a part of that. But at the same time, then it's also voting against it. So it's not helping us. So there's a little duality. And are we sending thank you notes also to the other senators, to Senator Padilla and Feinstein, for trying to include that stuff?
Yes, we will.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. That's it for now.
Derek Kelly.
I'm assuming he voted against the bill because of the other content.
As far as I know, it's just the issues that the Republicans have as a caucus is the parity issue. Right. I don't think it's an issue with other provisions in that six bill package. I think it's a bigger question of the domestic spending versus the defense spending.
Yeah. So he didn't put in for $300,000 and vote against it. He voted against the entire package.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Jeff, any, what's the future outlook? Is there a compromise on the horizon or not really?
So there will be a compromise, and I think that compromise will occur after the election on all of the bills. I think the House moved six of their bills this week. I think they'll move another three next week. I don't think the Senate is going to take action. I think they'll enter into a House-Senate negotiated settlement after the election, and they'll wrap all 12 bills into a bigger package, and they will get that to the president before the end of this calendar year. That's my prediction today. I may have a different story next month.
Understood. No, thank you. Thank you for keeping us updated. Regarding EPA and PFAS, do you have any contacts at the EPA headquarters, one on Constitution and 12th Street? Do you get any updates from anyone in there regarding, you know, their public health goal? Like what exactly would they put out in the fall? Full regulation for PFAS that's planned to be out in the public later this year?
Yes, I do have very good contacts over the Environmental Protection Agency. I worked with several of their current staff when I was on the committee. They were also on the committee at the time. Some of them also worked at EPA. So we have good contacts at EPA. We've got good reach across all the agencies, frankly. But yeah, we're very tied in with EPA, particularly in the Office of Water.
Okay. So I know they're going to go ahead and collect more data regarding PFAS. But what can we expect from the National Drinking Water Regulation that might come out later in the fall?
This administration is kind of, they've published a roadmap in terms of the things that they want to do. They've printed out, you know, sort of made public their milestones. Obviously, they want to go through a regulatory rulemaking process for this. That's not started yet. When I get sort of more data points for you, we'll be sure you guys will be the first one we inform on that, because we know how important PFAS is. So the PFAS front's been quiet the last couple of weeks. But I'm sure before the members go home, and probably during August, we'll get some more and better intel for you in terms of timing on that rulemaking.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your report. This is my first time being on this committee and chairing this committee. I have communicated with you by email, but it's good to see you. I've seen you before by attending the meeting, but let's hope it's for you to get to see me in my face for the first time too. Thank you for your report. I don't think there's any.
Just real fast, when does Congress and Senate go down for a recession?
For the election? For recession.
For summer.
For the recess. It'll be House goes out June 29, which I think is next Friday. They may go out next Thursday.
July.
The smell of jet fumes at National Airport tends to bring the deal together quickly. And then the Senate recesses on August the 5th.
And they come back?
For 3 weeks in September, and then they're both gone the first week of October for the election.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay.
Chair Arzanowski, I'll just take a moment if I can.
Sure.
I think, you know, Jeff provided an example, and maybe for a couple of the newer members on the committee, the advocacy program has been rolling with Jeff's firm and also, you know, Dennis's firm for a while now. And one of the big goals that we had when we set out and we kind of changed direction a little bit when we moved to different advocates in Washington, D.C., was to really have a program that, you know, worked kind of both ends of the equation. So these funding opportunities that you're starting to see success with at the agency now, I think I used the term long play, right? These are long play things that were starting to come to fruition now. So I'm just excited about it. I want to thank Jeff and his team and Dennis and his team and Hunt as well. You can see our advocacy program really starting to provide benefit for this community. So it is a lot of work behind the scenes to kind of align these processes that Jeff's talking about. You know, we're now at the point of getting funding, starting to get funding identified at the front end of the process, which will, as we go through and start to access that through the agencies, provide us even additional benefit. So I just wanted to take a moment to thank them for that, because it really is starting to show some reward for the community and the investment that we make in the effort.
Thank you for that statement. Yeah. It's understood that it is a long game, but thank you for the work that you've done, Jeff. Okay, with that, we can move to item 3.2, which will be presented by Dennis Salviani and Anthony Molina from California Advocates.
Thank you for the opportunity and welcome to the new members. We appreciate that. And we look forward to meeting you in person at some time in the near future, maybe at Aqua or even getting down to a committee meeting or a board meeting in the future. So we appreciate that and welcome. So what we think and how we typically start our presentations are where we are in the process. You know, California moves very quickly and things change very rapidly. So the month of July happens to be a time where we are on a break. So went through and the right before July 4th, they went out on their summer break. But before they did, they passed several versions of a budget. The first budget, what we call the constitutional budget, on June 15th, actually the 13th, they passed it. And then they come up and they've done two junior budgets or baby budgets, which changed that original document. Anthony will talk about that. We'll talk about all the different opportunities and who we're working with and that. What then in the legislative process, we're now all the policy committees for both houses. So bills have gone through both assembly bills to the assembly, then the Senate. Senate bills to the Senate and then the Assembly, all their policy committees. Now there is the ones that are still alive are either on the floor or the vast majority are in Appropriations Committee. And so they sit on a file called the suspense file or and they get reviewed for their costs and the leadership and the committee members make priorities of where they want to spend money this year. And that's the appropriations or where they want to direct all the bills that cost money and the funds. And so that's where it is right now. During the second week of August, they will come off the suspense file, the priorities. The other ones stay on the suspense file, and then they're essentially held there. So they stay on suspense and don't move. The ones that come off then go right to the floor of the second house. Once they go through that, and that's between the second week and August 31st, because we're at the constitutional deadline of when the Constitution says the legislative session shall stop on August 31st at midnight. So we'll go to that night, and then the governor, anything that passes, will have 30 days to sign, veto, or in California we have which pocket signature where it could become law without his signature, which is very rare. And yeah, you know, almost unheard of. So sign or veto. And then and that'll be by September 30th, 2022. So that's where we are in the process right now. So we're really coming down to you know, frankly, the number of bills that we've been watching or are out there have really, you know, shrunk down through different policy committees, or maybe a bill we had concerns with has been moved to a neutral, and that's okay, and it's moving through. Or, you know, one that we may have, you know, opposed, got held in committees. So all those actions have occurred. And then the last big sift is appropriations. So we have the report. If you don't mind, I'd like to refer to the written report, kind of go through a few of those bills. And I'm going to skip down, frankly, the turf bill is one. It's moving. State water contractors, sponsored by Met, are very excited about that bill and moving through. But I'm going to take it down to a last committee and that, and there was a change of position. So it's worthy of discussion. It was AB 2449 by Assemblymember Rubio. And that's on open meetings, local agencies, and teleconferences. So that bill, we discussed it last committee, decided to move to a support from a watch. There's a large group of coalition of not only water districts, but special districts and some of those folks, and we've been working closely with them, and that bill we now have a support. And this issue is, you know, about how do we, you know, what's the future of the Brown Act and some of the acts on how do we have to post, how do we have to that kind of after COVID, because we learned some things about COVID. You know, you can do meetings on virtual. Their technology has caught up. Some of those areas. So that's what the topic is about, governance, some of the requirements. You know, there's some boards would like to continue to have public participation on Zoom in those areas. Other ones are going to all in person as long as it's safe within their jurisdiction. So you can see how the different requirements, and it took a little bit of a different approach on those bills. And so 2449 is, there were several, six or seven bills that were introduced on this topic. And this is kind of the one that the consensus has gone around to moving forward. As we go forward, the other bill that, for those of you who've been on the committee for a while, been discussing 222 and frankly, the general policy of how to do rate payer assistance here in California. And then what does that mean to Santa Clarita? And what's legal, what's allowed, how does that work? And so 222 has been the bill that got parked on the Senate floor last year, held there at the author's request. So he didn't take it up or excuse the assembly floor. And so they just parked it because they're working with the Senate leadership along with the administration to figure out what to do with this bill. So it was recently amended. And so that's why I want to talk a little bit more about it. And Anthony and I and Steve and Kathy and talking with them on how we wanted to address this. I said, hey, you know, let's talk about the state, what AQUA concerns are, and let's just provide those to the committee. So an addendum to our report are the documents that we provided, which was the AQUA analysis, and then the some of the letters and things that have gone on. So with the AQUA analysis, I don't know if anybody had the opportunity to review that. But they go through, obviously, there's the issue that everybody's talked about since the very beginning, and that is the issue of there's not an identified funding source. And folks, most local agencies are not overly excited about it if they have to assess their own people, take their ratepayers from one group or class of ratepayers, and subsidize another one. And so they would like funds to come, and there were some federal funds last year. And then there are, you know, they're trying to identify whether there could be state funds that could go into a pot that's created by this bill, distributed to the agencies, and then the agency who would like it. And then the agencies then, you know, distribute it within their own jurisdiction. So there has been a lot of conversation about what state agency should administer the funds. So the folks right now, the bill was amended to put it in the state water board's jurisdiction. I think some people would like it to be in safe drinking water funds and you know, Department of Public Health in those areas because that's what they do. And so there's a back and forth on that issue still pending. And then there's a few other technical issues that come through in that that are outlined in AQUA's analysis and without, you know, rereading it or going through it, what that leads to. However, a lot of them are technical. And so in working with staff, with Matt, with Steve, with Kathy, last year, Matt coordinated directly, called up AQUA and spoke with Cindy Tuck, who leads their government affairs. And they actually requested that we stay with the coalition, which at that time was opposed unless amended and remains opposed unless amended. But after these recent amendments that definitely soften the bill, still has those faults, I think there's a conversation, and this is where it kicks over to you, the staff and those, to see if we move to a support if amended or remain as an opposed with amended, or we could go neutral. So that's why we gave so much information that, you know, it's a lot, and we appreciate that. But that's the idea and kind of where the background is. So I'd gladly on this issue turn it over to Steve or Kathy. And you know, we talked about it in our prep for this to see if they, you know, bring the group along, answer any questions, and go from there. So on 222.
So I don't, if the committee has specific input or thoughts on that, and we'd like to hear it at this point.
Well, hold on. Before we do that, we have to go to public comment. Any public comment from people here? No? Okay. Any comment from the public virtually attending?
There is none.
Okay. I'll open up to the committee. Mr. Clement.
Well, I think that the big issue was how to fund it. I don't think that I didn't hear on the board that there was an issue about doing it per se. It was about where the money was going to come from. So if there's a funding source from the federal government, I hope we can look into that. We did discuss looking at how they evaluated it from Valencia Water Company. You have some of that expertise already in staff, I would think. So I hope we can be supportive now.
Any other comments, questions, Dr. Bonstein?
Well, I have questions about other things too, but I'll start with 222. I think that I read through AQUA's analysis, and there are some valid concerns, but knowing that there is no funding yet, that's something that still needs to be negotiated, right? Because without funding, yes, we can't fund it ourselves. I think that with the amendments that have been happening, perhaps to encourage them to continue making the amendments, it's better to be either neutral or support if amended. Just kind of trying to bring them along a little bit more, saying, look, we're here. We see a good job. You've started making some changes. We're on board, but let's, you know, keep on going a little bit more. I'm more about the carrot in general. So that's my thought about the 222. Can I ask a minor little
question? Hold on, Dr. Bronstein. Dennis, do you have any further reports for any other bills, or do you want comments on SB 2-2 right now?
Well, I think, you know, the report speaks for itself. We've been working on state water contractor issues, and then we could, right, I'm glad to take the questions now.
Sure.
On the budget, we'll have, once these bill questions are discussed, then I would still like to give, if the chair approves, give Anthony the opportunity to talk about the budget, if that would be okay. But we can do that after we talk about the bills.
Not a problem. Dr. Bronstein.
Well, again, my questions are probably, they're more like introductory kind of things. Thank you, by the way, so much for your explanation. I really appreciate it, you taking the time to explain it in that way, because it definitely eliminated some questions that I had. I was wondering, so when we say that we, just in general, it's a general question. When we say that we are in a watch position, that means that we haven't made up our mind yet. We're just watching to see where the bill goes. And reading it correctly. But I was wondering if, you know, is that correct? That
it means that maybe even the bill may not be a direct target on Santa Clarita, or just one that, I'll give you an example, there was an earlier bill on about the North Coast and how they were doing water. It came out of a Santa Rosa area, had a dry, very, very dry year. And so they had to make some special rules for them. So then they had this bill. Well, we wanted to make sure it didn't expand to impact the service area of either the state water contractors, because we're a state water contractor, or Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, specifically within your jurisdiction. So we would, and it was a high visibility bill because it changed some of the water rights rules. I mean, that's always very testy. So that's an example of a bill that we put on there because we want to watch it. Like, hey, you may read the AQUA newsletter as a director and see something about this bill and go, whoa, this, you know, this is of interest to us. So that should do it. But we're just making sure it doesn't impact us, because lots of times things are amended afterwards, starts with a very narrow premise, and then all of a sudden they put the, what we call put the guts in the bill, and that would expand it to maybe impact state water contractors or expand it to impact Santa Clarita specifically. So that's an example where something necessarily we haven't made up our mind yet. It may not impact us, but it is a high visibility bill or something of interest that we care about.
Okay, so that's what it means. Anytime I see watch here, that's what it means. That we just, we're not sure if it's going to apply to us or not yet. Okay, that was my question, because I was like, every time it says watch, I was like, why? Why is that our position each time? So now I understand. Thank you very much. For example, on AB 2362, it says that our position is support if amended. And I was wondering if there could be an explanation of what it, like how it needs to be amended for us to support it. So, because just from that little explanation there, I don't understand, like, I don't know what I'm looking for, like what the problem is with it or why it needs to be amended. And also, I was really happy to see that there were notes here that you guys changed your position. And so that was really awesome that was noted there. I was wondering what happened. And so that was great that on 2449, there was a note that you guys changed the position. So I thought that was really helpful for me to see the process of when group here changes positions, what it looks like. But that's really it. I was just trying to understand organizationally how to read this and what it means and what else do I need to know.
Sure. So your predecessor requested that when position changed that. So we appreciate that from Director Armitage, and she had requested that, and we did it. And frankly, we've checked, just FYI, said there's some new members. We've been changing our report, frankly, under the kind of the new leadership of the board format, and actually trying to give more very pertinent information to what the you care about, or Matt and Steve direct us our priority issues of the state water contractors. So that's the written part here, or like we put the governance bill in. Then you see the big one is really every bill we're tracking, and tracking just means we put, you know, it may have something to do with, you know, water permitting. It may have something to do, but not affect the view. It might affect Coachella, might affect somewhere else. The other things also governance, you know, local governments issues. And so we track, you know, several hundred bills, and, you know, it's an electronic system. It tells us when something changes in those, and we pull them up and read them, just so you understand the process a little bit. So, We felt there was value in putting that in there so you can see kind of the breadth of what's going on and dig a little deeper, because you may hear something like, again, in an Aqua newsletter that isn't on the direct report. And so this gives you a little background on it and see what's going on. So that's kind of how we've done that. And I only mention this because it is evolving, and we work for, you know, well, Steve, Matt, and you. And so if you want something different, we're, you know, continually evolving that and trying to do that. And so we appreciate that. And then, you know, at times, and we try to stay, you know, it's a local jurisdiction board, but we can also, we may give some political information too. And we may, you know, there was a speakership battle earlier this year. Well, that's pertinent. And so we may actually sometimes put in political or some of that information, although, again, trying to be, you know, not partisan political stuff. That's for another time. But there's a lot of times politics will affect how bills move and what's going on. So that's what you're going to get out of the direct report. And then the tracking report's much longer, bigger, and frankly, a lot more, you know, chaff to get to the kernel, you know, that you got to sort through.
Yeah, well, I read it. I started reading all those bills. I was like, ooh, that's a lot. I really did like the way that you wrote it out. It is very informative and helpful. The only thing that I would like, if possible, is to just know, like, if our position is, if amended, I'd like to know what we're looking for to be amended on it. Okay. If that's not too much work, just because I'm curious what the problem is.
Yeah. So would a bullet points be, you know, three or four bullets, just say this? Again, we would typically not give you the entire, you know, to Aqua, you know, analysis or the legislative analysis. They've also done that, unless it's a really bill of controversy, which we could do, but I wouldn't recommend that. But we could break that down into two or three points in a bullet and put that under it.
I would really appreciate it if that's not too much. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Botstein. Any comments, questions from committee?
I've got a quick question, Dennis, and perhaps for Steve also. So the funding source has not been identified, as I understand it. And the language says that there'll be a third party doing the fund administration, or the funding administration of these, of the money that's going out. Is there any unfunded administrative cost of our agency, Dennis? I mean, Dennis and Steve, perhaps, that we've identified that aren't included in? Are we going to have any unfunded expenses administering this with what the current language says?
I would say most likely. I mean, it'll be a new process, right? And so I don't know that those kind of costs would be included, Dennis, or not.
The way it's structured is, if they were to get a funding source, and it came in, so $100 million put in there from the you know, August 20th, they do a budget follow-up and drop $100 million for this example. I don't know if that's being discussed at this point. Assume it happens. Then the way it's structured is, as a local entity, like many programs, we would apply for money. And so if we wanted the money, we would apply for it. So that would take staff time and resources. But, you know, you're trying to get money, so it, you know, that could be covered. Then the money, if you got it, then it would come down through that. And there is a priority for disadvantaged communities, and we have very few disadvantaged communities identified in our service area. But, you know, it comes through, some money comes through. And then to administer it, there would be some costs, obviously, locally. And you know, that would go on. But I think that probably would be covered by the grant award itself. You could, you know, I got to look to see if there is a percentage cap on that. But they definitely want it to get to the ratepayers that are there. And I want to clarify, last year's federal funding was to reimburse agencies for money because of COVID and some of the rules and executive orders and everything. There was some lack of collection from some ratepayers. And so entities could go on to that and get reimbursed and then basically eliminate the debt. There's a couple different provisions in it, but that was one of them to do. And I know Kathy worked on that and followed it. There were some workshops, but it wasn't specifically for this fund, just to clarify. But it was a federal ratepayer to make some of the entities at least partially whole on that. So just to clarify the federal funds, this is would go and cover the ratepayers' lack of payment as well. But that's how it would be administered.
So if there's any grant money available for SCD Water's administrative costs, it'll be during the program setup like that. It's not going to be ongoing every year. So eventually there's going to be some costs associated with this program that'll be borne by all of our ratepayers, even if it's an incidental cost. I think I just want to make that, I just want to be clear about understanding that.
So it's not a recurring grant. It's not going to happen every year. That's the question?
Pardon?
Is that the question, President Martin?
Dennis mentioned some sort of grant money available for the agency's cost in at least initiating this program, if it passes, if it goes through with the...
Okay.
Maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah, I can... Well, I mean, again, I think if you didn't want to apply for it, so let's start it that way. If you didn't want to apply for it, then it's not a, like some things are local mandates and there's other bills that are local mandates. And you have to do something. It's in my reading of this bill, I want to make sure that, and the amendments, you wouldn't have to participate. So then it would be Steve, no, really no time from staff. So that's the difference between like a local mandated program and this opportunity, I guess, for lack of a better term. But if you do participate in it, then there's going to be staff costs to get to qualify for the money, to administer the money, and frankly, probably to do audits, because they'll want to make sure that you follow the rules, you know, and you got it to the low wealth communities that they that were identified in the request and those kinds of things.
Thanks, Dennis. Yeah. Any other comments? Kellen?
If I could jump away to the 2142 real fast. On does any of the, we're showing support, does any of the replacement, turf replacement deal with artificial turf? I know that we're not including artificial turf in our conservation efforts. And if so, is any of the $75 million, you know, budget related to the artificial turf industry?
Yeah, so this is intended to provide individual, runs through the water agency. If they choose to do a turf replacement program, meaning take out living grass and replace it with artificial grass, xeriscape landscaping, where it's, you know, succulents and things like that. I know some of the schools wood chipped some ground and put that in there. So any of those types of activities would be eligible for, but it's the thought is you're taking out grass and there's a cost to do that. And one of the eligible things would be, you know, the AstroTurf is the term, but a synthetic product, but it also could be, like I said, wood chipping, xeriscape, whatever.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Dennis, thank you for your review of the bills. I have a few questions on my own.
Sure.
2449, we are supporting it. I just want to make sure that should our broadband fail, we can continue with the meeting. We don't have to stop and then reschedule it. Is that right?
Anthony, you've been working on this bill. I'm going to turn it over to him. I'm not sure I know the question, but go ahead.
Can you restate the question? It broke up just a little bit on my end.
Sure. Let me repeat it. So if our internet connection breaks or halts and we cannot broadcast to the public that's attending virtually, can we still continue the meeting or do we have to reschedule until it's fixed?
That's a very good question. I am not positive on that. I can reach out to the author's office and I will clarify that and be able to get you an answer. I'll send it to Steve and we can get that clarified for broadband issues.
Okay. Thank you, Anthony. Yeah, that's what we do here at our agency, just to continue with the meetings. They're open to the public. They're in person, but we also offer virtual attendance to any members that can't make it. But we can continue with our meetings if, for example, our internet goes down, we can't, you know, broadcast anymore.
Right.
Okay, so please get back to us on that one.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely will.
All right. And then just quickly back on Senate Bill 222. So the technical issues, Dennis, they're all referencing who's going to pay it, who can apply for it, and how it's going to be distributed. Am I correct in that assumption or understanding of that bill? Those are the technical issues?
Well, which agency is going to administer it as well? So which, you know, bureaucrats are going to be in charge? Who's going to pay it is, I wouldn't call that a technical one, but I respect that point.
Where the funds are going to come from.
Yeah, where the funds are going to come from. Good point. Again, folks don't want to have to tax the folks. And then one time they had a proposal where they would send it to Sacramento and then you may get some of it back to your agency. That wasn't well given by locally elected people like yourselves. So some folks were concerned about that, for example, as one of the proposals.
Go ahead.
Well, there were some other issues on, you know, even eligibility thresholds, who would be eligible and not. And not only the individual ratepayer, but also which jurisdictions would be available, would be there. So that's an ongoing conversation too.
Understood. So if we have a ratepayer who does not pay or refuses to pay, but they don't fit a certain income bracket, then, you know, we would not be able to recoup those lost rates, right? With this bill.
Probably not with this bill, but there are other, you know, Matt and Steve can talk about, that's a whole another set of law and how you collect, and there's certain requirements before you turn somebody off. And that was changed in a law. Actually, I think it was a Dodd was the author of that law too, Senator Dodd, on, you know, how many days you have to wait and how you go through that process before you could turn somebody off, and then whether you get reimbursed or not.
All right. And last one, AB 1157. This is where you restricted the amount of gallons per day per household or per capita. What's the status with this bill, and what's the reception in Sacramento on this one?
Great question. That is a very, very controversial bill. And still very, very controversial. And AQUA, and we're engaged with that as well, have been working with the author, Senator Hertzberg, and, you know, discussing that. And to be frank, we are very involved, just set up a meeting earlier this week with the Appropriations Committee, where it's sitting. It's in the Assembly Appropriations Committee. I think some of the concerns are about getting to the 42 number of gallons per minute, gallons per day, sorry, by, you know, on the dates required, and whether that number is even the right number. There was TWR did some studies, and they only did half of them, you know, half the study. They didn't look at the impacts on other infrastructure, on fixed costs. So like water recycling programs or POTWs, does that make salinity go up so high on discharge requirements? So that's the half they didn't do. So one of the amendments on that, and I think the biggest amendments, to be frank, is, you know, the first number's okay. Let's reduce down by 2025. Then have an entity look at the impacts of going lower on infrastructure throughout, and it'd be like, again, water recycling, POTW, sanitation districts, you know, the permitting, those kinds of areas, and then and cost and impacts on ratepayers, and then come back and have that discussion about whether 42 is the right number, and it can be done in that amount of time, and the investment in those areas. So that's the ongoing dialogue. There's a lot of agencies that are strongly opposed, some kind of opposed, and a few that have said, well, we're willing just to sit on the sidelines and see how this one plays out.
Understood. Are you looking for a direction from the committee or the board regarding that one, or that has already been addressed by previous committee leadership?
Yeah, it's been the staff has given us direction on that to do that. And
I would just say, I think it's consistent with the board's adopted legislative policy principles. That's important to note, that we are trying to work within the framework that's provided by that.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Okay, before we move on to budget updates, Mr. Cole, are you looking for any further conversations, any of these Senate bills or Assembly bills? Any input from the committee?
I don't think so. I think Dennis did a good job of walking through. Hearing the discussion, I think we'll just continue to engage on 222. We are in the room. Dennis is in the room. So we've heard the good input, and we'll continue to try and refine it and look at something that's going to work for our agency.
Okay. And that case, let's go into second half of 3.2 budget update. Go ahead, Anthony.
Definitely. Thank you all for having me tonight. And thank you. It's very nice to meet you guys virtually. Like Dennis mentioned, hopefully we get to all meet in person at a very near date. I'll be very brief with the budget update. Dennis started to go into it in his introduction and let you know where things stand as of today. So on June 13th, as Dennis mentioned, the legislature did pass a budget to meet their constitutional deadline, which also means they continue to get paid and they don't have to forfeit their pay until a budget is passed. That happened. But subsequently, they have passed what's known as Budget Bill Junior since then, and there have been two of them, which essentially amend the larger framework agreement that was passed on June 13th by the legislature. There was major sticking points that the governor had with the legislature that they really wanted to work through, but the most prominent one, which I'm sure you guys have read in the LA Times or seen it in the media, was relief to Californians for inflation and gas prices. That was a major sticking point. The legislature had ways they wanted to address the issue. The governor had ways he wanted to address it. And he basically was a leveraging point for him to not sign the budget until they could come to an agreement. That being said, they did come to an agreement, and they based it off income level as well as dependents for families in California. When they come to that agreement, the governor did sign the original framework budget and then also signed the two subsequent budget bill juniors. That being said, he also passed a bunch of trailer bills in different spaces, education, natural resources, water, transportation, that followed along. They really defined some of the larger programs within the budget. What has not happened thus far is there's a $21 billion climate package that remains to be negotiated by both the legislature and the governor's office. Of that $21 billion climate package, $1.4 billion is going to go to drought and resilience. Those will be likely new programs that are going to be funded in the budget. And then some of the more controversial programs, I shouldn't say controversial, some of the programs that are they're still ironing out the details that are going to have to be funded will be a part of that larger package that will be passed in August. As you can see in your report, and I won't go through each line item, those programs that have already been agreed upon and have been funded through the California Emergency Relief Fund are existing programs, and it's basically refilling those allocations of funds through budget allocations that the legislature has already agreed upon and will continue to support now and in the future. With that, that's the budget update. Again, we're going to see a large climate package that we'll be able to get you guys details on, specifically in the drought resiliency area, come mid-August when they need to have final trailer bill language to get all of this negotiations worked out. With that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Hey, thank you, Anthony. Are there any public comments? Any virtual public comments?
There is none.
Okay, so we'll open up to the committee. Questions from the committee? Director Bunce.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Molina. Thank you so much. I actually really appreciate it, and I appreciated the little link there to the budget. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rothstein. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Yeah, pleasure meeting you, Anthony. I do have a question on the $1.46 billion for drought resilience and response. You mentioned there's some projects that are on they're still debatable. Are any of those funds could be used or might be used or will be used for the Sykes Reservoir or Delta Conveyance Project, for instance?
I believe there that so for the Delta Conveyance Project, there was a bill last year that was supported by the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, SB 559. It's currently on the inactive file on the assembly floor. A part of that funding was actually allocated last year, which was $100 million. There is still $100 million tied up for the conveyance project in this year's budget that will be a part of that larger package. Last year when it was approved for $200 million. But given that it was only $100 million for that fiscal year, they still have to pass this year's budget to get the remaining $100 million for the Delta infrastructure improvement project. So that is a part of that $1.4 billion that is still being negotiated and worked on between between the governor and the legislature.
Understood. So what projects are the debated projects for this $1.46 billion?
I wish I had more details to provide you, and I'm happy to do that in a subsequent link. But essentially what happens through the budget process is the governor comes out with his January 10 proposed budget. When you get to the May revision, he revises that proposal, which at the time the legislature then takes the proposal of what the governor has proposed, and they say, we're going to reject this issue that the governor had. We're going to accept this issue, which are likely the funding line items that you see in the document right now. Those are what they have agreed to. And many of the proposals, that gives the legislature the opportunity to respond with their priority projects. Both the Assembly and the Senate have different priority projects for water. Some of them deal with water rights. Some of them deal with funding specific projects in certain districts. A whole host of different issues that the legislature wants. As of right now, there is no specific list of where that is in those negotiations. But essentially, that's what we're waiting to see what comes out to figure out what the priorities are of not only the legislature, but what they actually agree to that the governor may have put out in a January or May revised budget. I wish I could be more direct on exactly what those are, but still it's unknown at this point.
Okay, understood. And looking at page 10 on your activity report, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but so you participated in the APWA meetings and the Region 8 committee meetings. If I have an agreement with every director here, I was wondering if you can speak with APWA and ask them to do some sort of a commemoration for Vice President Jerry Gladbeck, since he was an APWA former APWA president.
Yeah, he's a legend. honestly, with in not only APWA, LAFCOs and right. special districts, his breadth of knowledge, and he'll be hugely missed. I will advance that. We'll talk to Matt as well about an appropriate articulation. But I specifically serve on the state legislative committee. And so we'd be glad to bring it through that channel. But I think maybe Matt and Steve have some more direct channels to the leadership, but we're glad to do that. And yeah, Jerry will, and his knowledge and his experience, it will just be missed. I would like to talk just generally, since you're new to the committee, California's slightly different than the federal government. And we do very little earmarking in the budget. Okay. There might be something, though, somebody got $1 million for a park or something. And you'll see that there, in the last 2 years, really that came back just because there was so much money. And when I started in the 90s, there was quite a bit of that. But the last 20 years, it's been very minimal of that. What they typically do is say, we're going to do stuff for sustainable groundwater management. We're going to put $500 million in it. And then every sustainable groundwater management district and an entity can apply for that with their projects. Hey, we have a $3.8 million project. It's going to help, you know, widen this floodplain to allow more recharge when there's high water events, things like that. So, and we're working on a few of those right now that Steve, you know, Bouquet Creek that goes through the Wildlife Conservation Board and those kind of things. So there's typically we have a big bucket, goes to the agencies. They say the criteria, how they're going to do it, the legislature will put on, oh, it needs to go to disadvantaged communities. They may even say 60% should be spent below the Grapevine, 40% north, whatever they work out. But that's about as detailed as they get on a lot of these buckets. And then they go to, you know, SGMA, floodplain management, other problems. So that's kind of how California works. And so even when it's passed, it'll say $500 million for SGMA, but we won't know that the LA groundwater entity got that money or went to Kern County or went wherever until, you know, 6-8 months, maybe even a year later, when all that money gets passed through grants, typically to the agencies. And frankly, Steve and some of your staff are even more experts than I am on exactly how that process works.
I understood. Thank you for that. All right. Last minute questions, comments. All right. Dennis Anthony, thank you for your report. And it's a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Looking forward to future reports from you guys. Okay, we'll move to item 3.3. Hunt Brawley from Poole and Shepherd. Hunt, go ahead.
Good evening. First, I apologize. You're on my cell phone this evening. For whatever reason, the Zoom still wasn't working from up here in the Great North. So I apologize for that. But let me just make some highlights on my report. I usually, first of all, welcome to the new chair and members of the committee. One of the things I report on is the Safe Clean Water Watershed Steering Committee, which I serve on along with several members of the agency staff. We've been dark for three straight months, finally had a meeting on July 7th. And so as not to wait until my next report, just to give you a few highlights. Main issue was the consideration and approval of the outreach program, which is done through our coordinator, Tree People, who several of you probably have dealt with. They've been involved in this community in the past, especially on the Arundo removal issue. And each watershed committee has a coordinator. We chose them last year, halfway through the year. So this will be their first year. It's a fairly robust outreach program to reach out to the various issues. One of the questions that was raised, which would be of interest to this group, is there was some discussion about the Bouquet Canyon area and whether it was technically in the watershed or not, and should be, and whether the issue, which, as I heard correctly, there may be some funding through the federal government for the program, should be part of the watershed. After some discussion, it was determined that yes, since the water comes down into the watershed, it should be part of it. A couple of other issues. There's been some concerns expressed with myself and but other members of the committee about transparency. The projects we funded are relatively minor. We had asked for the ability to do some visits of those projects, and staff basically hasn't gotten back to us. So we'll see whether or not there's more response in our meeting in August. We should be meeting, I believe, the first Thursday in August. The two city council meetings in June, which I monitored for the agency, again, more for the new members than the old, is increasingly in the last 6 months at city council meetings, the public comment section has become, I'll use the term robust. Santa Cruz City Council has a 30-minute public comment at the beginning, which 10 speakers to 3 minutes each. If there's more public speakers on non-agenda items, it's put at the end of the meeting. What speakers are now doing are commenting on numerous issues on the consent calendar. They're even signing up to talk about council reports, even though those are all verbal and you don't know what the council reports are when you speak. Just an attempt, again, to continue to bring up whatever issues are concerned with them. This has resulted in one change in how the city council conducts their meetings. They've now put all the public hearings at the beginning of their meetings after the initial public comment period, and the consent item, which usually was at the beginning of the meeting, at the end of the meeting, in an attempt not to have public hearings derailed and delayed unnecessarily. And among the issues that come up at the public comment, again, this will be redundant for some committee members, city has a human relations roundtable, which has gotten a lot of negative input from some members of the public and some questions and concerns. Some racial issues and inclusion issues have also been coming up recently. In the June 14th meeting, the main issue was the budget. I had indicated in my report I would provide a separate number with highlights. I've been waiting to get some further summary information from the city. I just got that today. So I'll be preparing that. I will get it to Steve and Kathy, and they can distribute it to the committee. But it is an extremely robust budget, $299.3 million. 84.7 is the capital. And the still will have a reserve in its general fund of approximately $20 million. The city received just north of $30 million in the most recent COVID relief package, $15 million for this budget cycle and $15 million for the next one. So that will be able to enhance several of their programs. The other main issue on June 14th was the city entered into a new solid waste contract. Some of you may be aware that these can frequently be very contentious situations. The last one the city did almost 20 years ago was quite contentious. And waste management was awarded the residential Vertec, the commercial. This time the city staff had a total control over the process. They put basically a confidentiality on any bidders, could not contact staff other than through the bid process or members of the council. And it was very much kept in-house. There were three bidders, waste management, Vertec, Athens Waste, who just recently won a big contract from waste management in Thousand Oaks. The city then did their internal scoring. Vertec came out significantly on top in the city scoring on both commercial and residential. Staff recommended they get the contract. And unlike a lot of these situations, the other bidders basically folded. Waste management expressed regret that they didn't get it, but Athens didn't really say anything in public. One of the issues here is, even though there will be an initial rate increase more significant for commercial than residential, there are controls and limitations on how they can be increased. And one of the main issues here is the state, as the water agency knows, continues to come down with more mandates. The biggest mandate that has to be implemented in this contract will be that food waste needs to be recycled. And there's going to be a process and a lot of education. Also, we'll get new barrels, and the barrels will have different colors now, which will probably confuse people. But the contract goes to effect July 1st of next year. The next meeting, big item, which the city does frequently. They don't necessarily do it every year. A public opinion poll, which they did. I highlighted some of the issues. Everyone can take it maybe with a grain of salt, all the positive about how high people think about the city and everything else. I'm not going to argue that point. I always look at it for what are the issues. So the key issues are public safety, 23% growth, 20% traffic, 19% homelessness, 16%, which is, I think, pretty consistent with where they've been in the past. I'm just looking at my report. Yeah. So again, growth remains right at kind of the top of the issues that people raise. And then the budget was officially adopted at that point in time in the June 28th meeting. Of interest to the agency, also on June 28th, the city awarded two contracts for removal of some invasive species at both the McBean Parkway Bridge and the New Hall Ranch Bridge for a cumulative total of about $2.1 million. It's dealing with the Arundo primarily, but also tamaracks were the two species that were identified in the staff report. Source of funding comes from both the city's Bridge and Thoroughfare District, but also through some of the federal grants funding I just mentioned appears to have been utilized for that. And then the city did some additional acquiring of open space, another 200 acres up near the Haskell open space. I'll report on the July 12th meeting at the next meeting, but the city went on a goes on its annual 6 weeks hiatus after its July 12th meeting and won't meet until August 23rd. Those are the highlights. Obviously, happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any public comments? Any public comments virtual?
There's none.
There's none? All right, I'll open up to the committee. Okay, to plan back.
Was the survey part of the agenda item? Is it in the agenda packet or is it online? I'd be interested in looking more closely at it.
I will double check. I believe historically they're online, but I'll double check. Yes, it was part of the highlights were part of the agenda pack. If I can get more information on that, again, get it to Steve and Kathy so you don't have to do the search and get to that information.
Thank you.
Kelly?
Good evening or good morning or whatever it is over there, huh?
It is only 1 hour later than you.
So it's midnight. Okay. Meanwhile, where do roll-offs fall in the contract? Are they independent or they fall under the BRTEC?
There are a list of, I believe, 9 companies that are allowed to do roll-offs. I do not believe that this contract affects that separate process, but I can double check if that's of interest to you and let you know. It's not, I think, technically part of this contract. It's a separate, distinct process, and I believe they have some requirements as well. But the roll-offs are usually temporary, and therefore, I don't think are governed by this. But I can double check.
And I would assume that the roll-off companies would be local. Somewhere within the city limits?
No, not necessarily. I think there are some companies that are approved that may be from Sun Valley, the northern part of the San Fernando Valley.
All right, thank you.
Hi. Go
ahead. I had a question about a sentence. I didn't understand what it meant. If you can help me understand it. It's on our page 117. I don't know what it would be for you, but it says staff, the paragraph starts with public hearing was held on the annual special district assessment. And then it says staff indicated that it is the fourth year that most of the assessments are less than the maximum, which could be imposed by 30%. What does that mean?
Okay, so I didn't write that very well. Let me explain that. The argument by staff was that there's a maximum amount that they can increase these every year and that the increases were 30% less than the maximum.
Okay.
So they could be imposed by 30%. That just meant that they could have been 30% greater than they were.
Okay. Thank you.
I will try to do better in the future. As I'm looking at it now, I can see why I was confused.
Well, I'll just email you. I have a few other questions like that that I think are just a little typos, and I'll just email you and ask you about those.
That's fine. No problem at all.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. Any other questions from the committee?
Yes.
I have a few. First one, regarding BRTEC and waste management. Mr. Cole, who handles our waste on our sites? It'll be contract.
We do some roll-offs, so I'm not in touch with it, but I can get you the information.
Will that have an effect on our agency coming from waste management to BRTEC?
I don't think so. No, I mean, it's just waste service, so we'll get new bins, probably like everybody else, and we'll pay our fees and
okay.
Dispose of our trash.
And regarding the public opinion poll from the city, 1,203 responses. That seems like a very small sample size. Hunt, were they, do you know any more details about this public opinion poll?
I will tell you that Kathy beat all of us to the punch and just emailed out the link to the most current one and previous ones. But as far as, so you should get that information so you can compare them. But the sample is for those of you who have not maybe been involved in politics in the past. That is a significant site or group, and the 2.8% plus or minus is the accuracy. So if you were doing a poll on elections, for example, or any public issues, that is a decent number of responses and the 2.8%. So this is a scientific poll that the city is doing, similar to other public opinion polls you may read about in the newspaper or other sources.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Got
it. with no other questions, Hunt?
Another question.
Dr. Kellen.
So, Hunt, has the city given up, or is there any continued conversation regarding dry or wet MRF?
I'm sorry, any further discussion on what?
On the dry or wet MRFs? No, for the recycling and...
No, there's really... Well, you're going back in history. When we were one of the requirements of the RFP was that all the recycling be sent to a local facility over there off of across, easy to say, across from Home Depot there off of Soledad, which has gotten, I think, all the spent a lot of money to be able to take all the recycling that the city would have and will be up to date, as I understand it, to do the food waste as well. So whether that's technically a MRF under definitions, I can't tell you. But that was part of the requirement of the bidders, and that was one of the issues that Birtech was strongest on. Athens, for example, has their own facility in North San Fernando Valley. That's where they wanted to send it. But the city wanted to have the local control. So there is that facility there that will be handling the waste. And let me also mention about Birtech and commercial. Birtech currently has the commercial. So you probably have been dealing with Birtech for the last 20 years. So they now will get the residential on top of the commercial as of July 1st, 2020.
So the property you're talking about, the old Coast Recycling property on Soledad?
You know, it's I don't know if it was Coast, but it's right there adjacent to the river next to the cement facility, if that cement facility is still going. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Hunt, one more question for you. This is just, since I'm new to this committee, do we get any reports from LA County Supervisors meetings or discussions?
You know, I do monitor what they do, but I've not been including them in these reports, but I can certainly add that. Especially if there are highlights that are affecting what is in the interest of the. So I have no problem doing that. I consistently monitor what the board is doing and the various activities. So I can add that in future meetings. I have no problem with that.
Thank you, Ron. It's just any items within interest of this agency. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for the report.
If I can just add one last thing I forgot to mention, the new members. The city council has 3 seats up this November. Filing just opened for that, so we'll know, I think, by our next meeting who has filed for the city council. The other big change, which you may have read about, but we've certainly discussed it in this committee, is that the city council will be going to districts starting in 2024 with 2 seats, the other 3 being the ones elected this year, going in 2026, and there will be a public process starting sometime early next year with the community and the city on creating those new districts So that is something that will be a significant change with the city council.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm looking forward to knowing whose files. Okay, any other questions, comments? No? Okay, Han, thank you. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for the report. Okay, let's move on to item number 4, and that's presented by our very own Ms. Martin. Discussion of draft resolution and initial implementation action from the engagement gap analysis. Ms. Martin.
Thank you, Chair Orzechowski. With the committee's okay, we would like to switch items 4 and 5 so that our teachers who are there to do the presentation don't have to continue to hang out with the rest of it.
Understood. We can go ahead and do that.
So if that's okay, we are going to talk about instead item 5, which is going to be presentation of the programs that we offer to our water conservation education teams. They operate out of the trailer up on the Rio site. And we are joined tonight by Barbara Colley and Karen Clark, both longtime employees of the program. And I know that they'll probably go in some overview here, but I just want to mention that the program has been in operation for more than 25 years and has evolved to be a very well-respected program in the community. And we just have a great, very experienced team that brings these programs to our children. So I will go ahead and turn it over to Barbara and Karen.
All right. Good evening. My name is Karen Clark, and I'm one of the educational instructors here at the Water Agency. And tonight we're going to be talking about what we've been doing during the last 2 years and all of our programs. So give us just a minute here. We're trying to make sure that we have everything up for you and slideshow. And from the beginning, here we go. All right. So our educational programs for 2020 through 2021, due to all of the school closures that we had to reconfigure and adjust all of our programs to be virtual. We ended up sending emails to all of the teachers in the Santa Clarita Valley, and we let them know that we were going to be hosting virtual field trips. And we were met with a very enthusiastic response, and we were quite pleased to hear all of this. We connected to 5,745 elementary school students in the 2020-2021 school year. Then this past year, our educational programs, 2021 through 2022, the schools were still not allowing any field trips. We couldn't go to the classrooms and they could not come up to our site. We continued conducting our virtual field trips while we added some new modules to the curriculum. We also were able to drop off educational materials to the schools, which was a little bit different. We had bingo cards to drop off, all kinds of activity books, and we have fun promotional items as well. Our reusable water bottles are really a hot item. And in the summer of 2021, we delivered virtual presentations to our high school environmental science students. And in the 2021-2022 school year, we connected, and we were quite pleased, to 6,487 elementary and high school students. This was our website. Teachers would visit this. We had a drop-down menu with all of the different schools, and teachers would sign up for a day and a time that they wanted us to come and meet them virtually. In our kindergarten program, these are two of our newest employees, and we had to add a lot of props, as you can see, a lot of posters, all kinds of things. We focus in kindergarten on different uses of water. We have a water cycle felt story that we use to teach with. We also do a water cycle musical, and we end the program with some conservation tips, which is very important, of course, during the times of the drought. And in first grade, we continue with our water cycle story. We add more vocabulary words to that, and we share a felt story again. There's Barbara. She is doing a water cycle bracelet, which was our new element that we brought out to the schools. We brought out some beads and something that they could make a bracelet with. And then, of course, we ended with our conservation tips. In second grade, we do a lot of geography with the state of California. We talk about the State Water Project. We have also a story on water pollution and conservation. We do a water pollution demonstration with a sponge fish that's quite popular. And again, we end with some conservation tips. We continue those conservation tips in all of the grades. And in third grade, we talk about water on Earth and how little of the amount of fresh water that we have and why it's so important to conserve. The students become botanists, and we talk about how we grow plants and how much water is used for plants. And then we talk about something with hidden water usage in clothing and in food. And at the bottom there, Pandora is doing a demonstration on how much water it takes to make a fruit salad. And we teach the students that it takes 155 gallons of water to make an average fruit salad. And they're quite impressed by all of this. At this point right now, I'm going to turn it over to Barbara Colley, and she's going to be talking about our programs in the upper grades.
Righty. Okay, so hi, my name is Barbara Colley, and I'm going to talk to you about the grades four and up. So what we did for the fourth to sixth grade is we, again, discussed the State Water Project, and then we gave a live virtual tour. So it was a video where we talk through it and show the video of the treatment plant, since they can't come here. And then we have a groundwater model. There's Bonnie doing that, and we had the water colored blue so that you could really see that when it rains, the water will, some of it run off and some of it will soak underneath the earth. And then we also had a little review sheet of our treatment plant process. And as well, at the end, we had a bingo game to review their skills. And now in the summer of 2021, we added the virtual environmental science for our high school students. So here's Stephanie giving a Zoom lesson. So we were the hosts of the Zoom meeting, and the high school students connected to us, and we did the soil horizons where we talked about the different types of soil and rocks underneath our earth, and is a demonstration rather than hands-on activity in this case. And we talked about the drought and also environmental laws and regulations that affect our water supply. And then, of course, we talked about the water treatment process, which was a tour, but a much more comprehensive tour than what the elementary students get. And then at the end, we had a Kahoot game to assess their skills and also to take attendance. The Kahoot is a game that they play in their virtual high school classes, so they were familiar with that, and we thought they could relate well to it. But this summer, we brought some back in person, and this just started this month, okay? We just brought some students back in for a couple of classes already, and so here I am with the intro part, talking about the State Water Project, and this time an in-person tour, and we also showed them the drought map because we're in the worst drought in 100 years. And then also we showed pictures of Lake Oroville up there at the beginning of the State Water Project in 2017, and then what it looks like right now. Then we went on to an in-person tour of the treatment plant. So that was nice for them to see that. And then hands-on activities for the soil horizons. And they actually build layers of soil and rocks underneath our earth, just a little sampling of that. And then they had sieves that they separated the various materials of pebbles, rocks, sand, and clay. And also in the in-person, we have the soil permeability hands-on activity, and it shows how water moves through various materials and how the speed that it moves through. And then finally wrapping it up with laws and acts of that will affect our water supply so that it's clean for people to drink and also to keep the waterways free of pollution. And we talk about the Environmental Protection Agency that oversees and enforces these. Now, one thing we did new this year was we dropped off promotional and educational items for the students. We dropped them off about 2 or 3 days before each class that we would present so that they would have, for example, you know, these nice materials. But also when they created that water cycle bracelet, we did the materials so that they could do that and the bingo game cards and such. And we also had promotional items for the teachers with the brochures to show them how to sign up, especially if it's a new teacher, maybe a teacher that has changed their grade level. And in there, we had the brochures. We had some treats for them. It could be some night lights, just various things like that. Now, moving forward in 2022 and 23. So we, as I mentioned, had the Environmental Science High School. And then after 2 years of successful virtual programs, we are incorporating elements from the virtual elements into our in-person classes. For example, some of the visual aids and some new hands-on activities. So hopefully this fall, we can do the in-person for our elementary students. So the two things that we're working with the districts to find out is, are we allowed to go into their schools? Because for grades kindergarten through second, we do go into the classrooms. And are they allowed to take the bus to come over here? And that's grades 3 to 6. So we are prepared because these last 2 years, we have learned to be prepared for all possibilities. So this is what we've been doing the past 2 years and what we look forward to do in the future. So are there any questions?
Thank you. Any questions from our virtual public?
There's none.
Okay, I'll open up to the committee. President Marble?
Not a lot of questions. Well, I do have a couple of questions, but Karen and Barbara, thank you so much for what you do for the schools. I know it was a tough 2 years. I know it was a tough 2 years for the board going through this virtual world. But I'm sure you ramped up and got pretty proficient at it.
Yes.
Do you have any thoughts on the response you got from students as you got better in the virtual world as compared to the old world of in-person contact? Did you get... What kind of response did you get from the students who were attending virtually?
Well, they were really happy to have us back because there was a period of time, a few months, where they didn't have anything. So they were just so happy to have us in there. And then it got us to be creative with creating these new modules.
Good. Thanks for all you do. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you, too. It really makes me smile to see all these. I wish I were there doing it. I love it. I love the kids. I love talking about water. So yeah, it looks like so much fun. But also, are you going to continue to do virtual? Because that was pretty exciting, getting so many schools. You can't really do that when you do it in person.
We are just kind of open to where the districts will, you know, allow us to go. If we can come into the classroom, that's great. Or, you know, if they come up here, if we have to have something outside. So whatever those decisions are, we're going to be talking to some of the district people in the next couple of weeks and making some decisions.
And then, were you able to reach more people when you were doing it virtually?
That's what I was going to
ask. Yeah, that's where I was.
Yes. Yeah. We didn't have to drive to a whole bunch of schools. We could see 3 schools in one day.
Right.
Yeah.
There were some benefits along with some challenges.
I just hope that you'll be able to keep the benefits.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Seems like that's a good thing, to not have to do so much driving and reach more schools if they want to. And it seems like, because so many things, including our board, are starting to work hybrid now, so that, you know, I think we've discovered how to do it. So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Ronstein.
Thank you so much for this presentation. It looks awesome. As a mom, I'm like, these are exactly all the things, and you hit it really well for each grade. And really, I love the program. How high do you, like, what's the highest grade that you teach?
High school, so seniors.
So seniors will come into this too.
Right, that's the environmental science.
That summer piece. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's really, really awesome. How do we fund this program? Is it through the schools? Do the schools pay us for it? It's just something we do because we're awesome? It's something we do that because we're awesome. That's great.
Right. It is a free program for all of the different schools that are in this valley, including the private schools as well. And we do fund the buses. If they decide to come up here in third through sixth grade, those are paid for. So it's one of, you know, the only free programs out there. We always advertise it that way. And we let all of the students and the teachers know that it's a lot of fun and a lot of hands-on activities.
That's awesome. Have you guys reached out to the homeschooling community here in Santa Clarita?
We have reached out to them, and we did see, I believe, one I'm thinking mm-hmm. of right now that was interested in, and we met with those students.
Okay. And what's challenging about that is usually with the homeschooling community, they have many grade levels in one small class. Mm-hmm. So we teach one grade level at a time. They have to decide which one are we going to focus on.
That makes sense. Because I know that there's learning centers for homeschoolers, so it's easier to get a group. But I understand the challenge. I'm a homeschooler, so I get it.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to you guys. It's
thank you.
Really, really great program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bronstein. Dr. Kelly.
And this program has been around for a long time. It's been a great success and rolled over and over and got larger and larger every year. So I think it's great, you know, great abilities that you have to expand it and continue and make it bigger and better for the future. I do have a question a little bit regarding on the resolution, the fifth whereas on page 121. It's referencing the state of California and water resources with regards to communities of color and socioeconomic disadvantage.
Dr. Kelly, we're actually on item number five, not item number four. We'll do that next.
Yeah, that's not related to this.
It's unrelated to item five.
We skipped all the way to the end.
I think I should forget it for right now. I was reading it so intensely, and I was trying to figure out how it related to it. Now I know it doesn't.
Okay, I think nothing builds more confidence in our water, how we bring it to Santa Clarita, how we treat it, than educating our young minds. Since I came to the United States, I went to these field trips, and I fell in love with them. I lived in Virginia for a little bit, and my school district set up a field trip to see the Smithsonian, and I was floored. So I believe what you guys do, it's great. One question though, you reach out to public schools and private schools, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. All right, and I see that on your team, you have a total of eight, but under my org chart, I see there's one vacancy. Ms. Martin, have we filled that vacancy yet or not?
Not yet. When we were all limited by COVID to doing virtual classes, the lead instructor, Jenny, decided that it wasn't necessary at that time because we only have one room to offer classes in, so we can only do one at a time and didn't really have the capacity. But if we are successful in getting back in the classrooms and field trips, then we'll look at that.
Oh, excellent.
I should note too, they are all credentialed teachers in this program.
Oh, wow.
They work to match what they teach at each grade level as closely as they can to the state curriculum standards for that grade level, so that when a teacher invites them in to teach something, it's something that they're required to teach in that grade, and so we're providing that service rather than just an extra activity.
Understood. We're looking forward for Charlotte to be in this. Just one more question for the high school classes, the environmental science, it's algebra based, right?
I didn't understand.
Can you repeat the question, please?
For the high school program, you're using a lot of algebra for fluid flow or movement of water. Is that correct for the environmental science class?
Not really. Yeah,
for environmental science, and it's kind of their introductory course before they actually take it. So we had met with the teachers a few years back, and they kind of came up with some hands-on activities that they wanted us to do, as well as some different vocabulary and everything. But it's a two-hour program. There's not really a lot of math. I mean, we go over some different figures and things like that, but it's more hands-on. And the classes for environmental students.
Understood. Well, thank you. Great program. Ms. Martin, thank you for including this in today's presentation.
Yeah.
Thank you both.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night.
Right. Good night. To item number four, the discussion of the engagement gap analysis.
Thank you.
Ms. Martin.
So this is actually our fifth time. Yes, now we are on that resolution. This is our fifth time bringing this item to the committee. I kind of lay out what we've done in the past in the summary part. So what tonight is for is, there was some suggestions on the resolution, one in particular that I came back to that last time. There was also a question about where the items came from on the recommended implementation actions. I just wanted to go over those things briefly. I don't want to spend a lot of time, so we have talked about most of these items, but happy to catch up with new members. I will note, too, that piece of the agenda, we brought back everything that the committee has already reviewed and passed forward, like the demographics and the community leaders review, guidance documents from other water agencies. Those have all been seen before, but we wanted to bring this all together and then pack it just for easy reference. So if I can go through briefly what we are adding on the resolution, which is on page 121 of PDF or of the page number at the bottom, or if you're looking at it digitally, it's 127 of the PDF. One of the comments that was made last time was just to have more of the foundational starts. We added that one first, whereas, just to state why the agency has taken the step to start this process and express our commitment to this inclusive engagement. So that first whereas was added for that purpose. And I also wanted to point out on the resolution, if you look down at the last whereas that has the numbered items, the resolution is meant to be that a living, breathing process document. That's something that we will have to continually revisit and advance as we learn new things. So like those last three items in particular, this process is to develop and strengthen and innovate and learn. So definitely not done with this once we have this adopted. And then on page 123 is the draft potential implementation actions. And we did have this document the last time we were here, but what we added, there was a comment that after so much detail in the other material that we provided, this seemed a little bit vague. And I wanted to explain that this document, these potential actions, came about after a lot of conversation with our consultants, Kirby Ness and myself, as to what was first feasible that we could do and have bandwidth to do in the next 12 months. But we also added footnotes to it. So you can see if we picked an item that we thought we could do, we indicate, you know, that it came from a community leader interview summary and the characteristics assessment, or manager's memo. I mean, that item does have specific comments as a foundation for why we're suggesting those things. I think the number one implementation item that we're looking forward to doing is item number 3 on page 125, is just advancing and out and refining the outreach with community partners, especially those that serve and work with those underserved communities. So we've already made great inroads in starting a communication with those groups. But some of the things that are kind of the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, is to go back to those groups and find out what they're doing. Where, you know, are they going to have a church community outreach or a neighborhood fair, resource fair, or something that's held at the Newhall Community Center? Things that are, instead of just the big events that we participate, find those local ones that are happening in these communities that we want to be sure we're reaching and have a presence. So that's one of the things we're looking forward to finding and participating in. For next steps, we've had two phases of work so far with Crimson West, and staff is planning to move forward with one more phase, an additional contract with them. And a couple of the main things that will come out of that include creating a guide for our staff internally on conducting public outreach. Now, when we do planning efforts like urban water management plan or right now sustainability plan, we generally have some consultant support. We have, you know, staff on my team that's done this a lot and knows what they should generally do. But the program managers may not have had to do outreach other than what's required by some kind of a regulation or part of the plan. You know, urban water had, here's the minimum things you need to do for community outreach. So what we want to do is work with those program managers like Matt Dickens or Sarah Fleury or ones that help with these plans and create a guidebook so that each time we are doing a new plan, we have something to refer to make sure that we are not overlooking any of the communities that we've identified along the way and make sure that we incorporate these new best practices we find. Like, okay, this works for this particular community. Let's be sure that we always include that each time we do an effort. So we've asked Friends of West to continue on with their work and help us create that guidebook and train the staff to that end. And that's something that we'll be just doing here in the next couple months. So I'll stop there. What we're seeking tonight is just consensus from the committee to take the resolution to the board for adoption at an upcoming.
Okay. Before we hear from the committees, are there any members of the public attending virtually that have any comments?
There are no public comments.
Okay. I'm going to kind of break with the protocol here and say a few things before I open up to the committee. Ms. Martin, Mr. Cole, and former UL committee members, I would like to apologize because initially when I learned about this gap analysis, I was under the impression that this was something that was either ordered by Mr. Cole or former committee members because they were not happy with how Ms. Martin engages with the public. That is totally incorrect. That is, was a complete misunderstanding on my part. I spoke with Ms. Martin. This is just a continuation of how we outreach to our ratepayers. So please accept my apologies. And with that, I'll open up to the committee. Right, Kelly.
Question still stands. I'm the fifth, whereas that's just following the guidelines of the state water resource, right? It's not something that we created.
No, and that list of communities, you will find them in the two documents referenced, but it's also part of some of our agency the board policy on fair treatment and use of authority in the government code and in our it's like the board behavior.
But we're developing the resources to reach out and negotiate and handle that part.
Yes. I mean, you've heard like Aqua created a whole division this year just on
Right. DEI, that's the, is definitely the trending activity right now, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So we want to be sure that we're not left behind on that, that we're doing our part. The Board of Directors policies and procedures, that was so hard to remember. It references also the classes of people that we want to be sure that we're including.
Any other comments, questions? Director Bunston?
I have nothing against the resolution. I made a little heart at the end. I was like, I like it. This is a nice resolution. But I just want to make sure that we're have cultural competence, like we learned, that we need to make sure. And I think for me, it's not, I think that these, I appreciated the footnotes, so I understood where these things came from, but I also still feel like they weren't concrete things. It was more still, it wasn't really have we identified those community leaders that we're going to be approaching, and do we know, like, for example, like, there are many rebates out there, and how are we making sure that, like, how likely is it that people that we're trying to get to use these rebates, either low income or marginalized, like, how likely are they to use these things? If there's ways for us to, I mean, there are a lot of really good things here. And I like, for example, the community-wide survey.
What page are you referencing?
132, I think. Yeah. So I was just wondering, like, who are the people that are likely to answer a survey? Like, are we going to be able to actually get the people that we need to get for these surveys? That seems like a really big challenge.
Well, the community survey is actually something that's on my list, and I mentioned for this coming fiscal year, it's exactly like what the city does every 2 years with the general citizen survey. We are overdue to do one here at the agency. We did one right after I started. Yeah, shortly after I started. So it would be a general customer base wide survey, but statistically valid, and with the help of a consultant to make sure that it also had that low margin of error, was statistically relevant, the sample size. But we would add a group of questions to address some of the things that are in here. And I feel confident that we would get to the places that we want to get. And then the other thing is asking about, like, you know, will they take advantage of rebates, or who is it we're supposed to be talking to? That's what these initial implementation actions identify, and making additional connections with community partners. So we had an initial round of interviews. Part of the extra work from Kearns and West is they're going to take these things here back to those same people we talked to and said, "You listened. We think we heard what you said, and here's what we've come up with, and what do you think? Is this what we want to do? Can you help us, help connect us with resources in your communities that will let us achieve these goals?"
Okay, because I wanted to make sure that they were also giving us, or not us necessarily, but you, because it's the how, right? It's the specifics. They were giving you specifics, I guess, is what I was really concerned about, that they were actually giving you a real, and not like a lofty, like, identify people, like, great. Like, they were actually giving you, here are the people that you should be talking to. We've identified these key people, you know, that in the community, and
yes,
more community specific. So you guys don't have to.
Yeah, this list on the implementation actions, they came up with about 10. And we talked them together, and I said, we can do these 5. Let's start here, and then we can add to it as we go. But these are ones that my team feels confident that we can accomplish. We
have, and they gave you more specific stuff too.
Yeah. Like, wait, okay. Like, I know how to do number 3. I don't need anything more than what's in this memo to do that one.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Kathy, there's no cost associated with this yet, although the staff recommendation is to approve the resolution and, in the words,
initial implementation actions.
And?
Oh, provide feedback. Okay. So we're not approving the resolution? Or we're not, I'm not approving, but moving it forward.
It should be that you recommend.
What concerns me is the cost of the initial implementation actions. Carrington West is not a lot of work. There's a lot of content in their whole package. And is the plan to move forward with the actions that they recommend?
Yes.
And we would get a cost estimate or a cost promote.
The action items in this list are things that we can absorb ourselves and do ourselves without additional support. We have, and in my budgeting for 22-23, I accounted for some of these things are pretty nominal. The cost has really just been in the consultant cost to help get us to this point. So we have had a phase one and phase two contract with Kearns and West. We are embarking on a phase three that will result in that guide for doing this kind of engagement. And we'll also include the follow-up with the community leaders that they interviewed the first time around. So there's, and that part is budgeted for. The third phase is up to $29,000. But actually implementing the actions here, there's not a cost.
So most of the actions are absorbed within the current staff structure, not adding any staff to do this. One would think we're adding work. So
it complements things that we do already. It just expands the audience.
The reasons are kind of about costs that are coming down the road. And my question is not so much about the cost, but, you know, in most of our programs that we've done in the past years since I've been on the board, there's always been a comparison with our colleagues out in the water industry about, well, what are the other agencies doing? And I'm just curious whether are there any metrics at all that would compare what it is Kearns and West is recommending we do versus what other agencies are doing. That's one question. And the second observation, just what I've seen amongst people we would be outreaching to, is a general lack of interest in what we do. And are we going to be outreaching to people who don't necessarily want to be outreached to? And are we just going to be spinning our wheels? Is this just for image sake, or are we really going to? In your view, I'm sure you think we're going to accomplish something important in this. And in other words, am I misreading the public and their lack of interest in what we do up here?
That's a great question. And, you know, Santa Clarita Valley has a shifting demographic. You know, I've only been here 4.5 years. And I don't know it's changed much more since then, but I know there is an increasing amount of diversity in our population, and that was shown in the most recent census. It's still a fairly low number, but we can't use that as a reason not to have that effort out there. There's definitely an increasing awareness of the impacts of not trying to reach all of the communities that you might reach. Is there an interest? I feel like we can't gauge that until we ask them. You know, we haven't got that much participation from them, but maybe that's because they don't know what we're doing and we haven't done a good job at meeting them where they are and meeting them in their language. I think there's definite value. I mean, you said, is it just an image thing? In a way, but not in a check the box way. I think that any public entity to be transparent and authentic in their offering of service to the customers that they serve need to show that they are making reasonable efforts to reach anybody that's in their customer base. You're right, we may find that it doesn't bring us a great uptick in anything, but you know, if we find a niche of people that...
I would be fine with tailoring or adjusting our message so that it can be received by all communities. as diverse as you, as we have become, I'm just wondering whether the common trait amongst all the diverse communities is the common trait of disinterest in what we do up here, basically. So,
isn't that a challenge for water agencies in general?
How many things have come up at the water agency where we've had other than token interest in the, from the public? As long as we deliver the water that we're clean, reliable water to their tap, it seems like they're just happy. I'm not sure. So I'd be just a little hesitant in investing a lot of extra money in something like this. But I'm certainly supportive of making sure our message gets to all communities across the board, regardless of language, ethnicity, or anything else. So if we need to make an extra effort to do that, then I think it's worthwhile. I'm just probably expecting that we'll get similar response.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest communication gaps we've noticed is in our ability to reach renters, like the actual end user. And the initial implementation actions doesn't address that. Our database, our customer database doesn't have right now the ability for us to know that this is a renter. I mean, unless they're the person paying the bill. Obviously, it's hard to reach them, but they're still important in conservation efforts. And there still can be advocates in getting, more water efficient items in the place that they're renting. This initial won't do that, but that's just an example though of something that.
Well, I'm part of the goals steps. Of the resolution. I just
wait
to see down the road and see.
It's a good point.
What the actions that we're going to take mm-hmm. cost price tag on the mm-hmm. and burden on our staff.
I think Director Bronstein and President Martin bring up a good point. Like I'm looking for detail from Crimson West, but it seems that the majority of the report was written by you and your staff. Can you tell me what did Crimson West present to you that you did not already know, or that you did not know? Sorry.
Let's say they wrote it all.
Okay, so they're responsible for presenting the report and making sure it's concise, specifically with the census data. And identifying our
they did the initial research with
the regions, but as far as the gap analysis, seeing that every single event, what did they tell you that we're not doing?
If you look at the page 123, the implementation actions. So with being conscious of costs and staff resources, after all of the research was done and they interviewed community leaders in these identified populations and I interviewed our program managers, it's this short draft potential implementation actions that it all boiled down to. It was trying to find things that we could do that were cost-effective and reasonable and feasible for the resources that we have right now. And I think the main things that came out of this were just an awareness of our demographics. Those maps, I wasn't aware of the concentration of some of these ethnic communities in our service area and where they are. We also made some great contacts just through like the Veterans Organization and some church leaders and the homeless shelter and some different people that we had never talked to directly before, and found some outreach opportunities that we can use to try to get to the populations that they serve, that they say aren't getting
information. You've never reached out to any leasing offices that oversee apartment complexes?
We have a lot of contacts with property management, apartment management in the rebate arena. Like we do, Matt Dickens and his team will go in and find a property manager that's interested in participating and replace, hundreds of toilets and faucet aerators and help an entire apartment complex bring down their water use. We do have a lot of contact that way, not with the individual residents if they're not listed as the account
Okay. And there's a statement on page 123, environmentally burdened communities. Can you define that phrase? What does that mean? It's on the second paragraph, page 123, where you identify diverse communities of color, socioeconomically disadvantaged communities, or environmentally burdened communities.
You're living next to a landfill, or you're living next to a boil well.
Yeah, where their neighborhood or location has an impact on their living environment compared to something that wasn't close to some industrial area or.
Okay.
Be like living next to a refinery.
Yeah, but I mean, our water is, if there's any issue with that particular water pipe going through that area, that's our responsibility.
Right? Yeah, these classes here come directly from the State Water Resources Control Board guidance document on that. Some of the classifications that we identify there and in the resolution come from some of those brief guidance documents. For us, the first two are our primary concerns, and I think the area that is ripest for having an impact in is the Hispanic community, specifically in the Newhall area, for example. There's a lot of church-based things that happen there. There's some events that happen at the Newhall Community Center. There are like school resource fairs and things like that that's specifically targeted to the General Newhall community.
Okay.
And they are, compared to the rest of Santa Clarita Valley, lower income. Typically, that's the highest percentage of Spanish-speaking population. So we know where they are, and we've started to learn where they gather and how they get their information. So one of the things that we want to do is just tailor the information we provide or send Laura, our Spanish-speaking public affairs specialist, out to have a table at one of their events so that they have a direct contact speaking to them with cultural competency.
Okay, so without Kearns and West identifying those pockets, you would not know how to move forward. Meaning you would not know when to send your team to that particular area, to those particular events. Is that right?
Kearns and West helped us make the contacts with the leaders in that community. That was part of that first contract that they researched and called around and made some contacts and got some interviews and met with those folks one-on-one.
Okay. And regarding your interview with customer service manager, do we get any sense of an idea of why people are not able to pay their bills?
That was not, that wasn't something that we asked, and it's not something that customer care asks either. When someone doesn't pay a bill, there is not an opportunity for an exchange to ask. Is it because of you just didn't have to because the rules that during COVID said you don't have to, or if there was a financial burden, or we don't have a resource for that?
Dr. Bonstein, I remember we had a board meeting where you spoke with our customer service personnel, and you mentioned that some ratepayers that are not able to pay share their story voluntarily with their customer service agent. Do you remember that discussion? It was a while ago.
No. Can you add a little bit more to it?
We were discussing whether we are able to help assist ratepayers who are either out of a job or not able to pay their particular bill. And I believe you mentioned that you spoke with someone from customer service at SCV Water, and they were sharing a story with you of some of the reasons why those customers weren't able to pay. I think at that time, I think you made an example how I think single moms living below poverty lines were deciding whether to pay the water bill or support a formula. Do you remember that?
I remember that part, okay. But I don't remember talking to a representative.
From our agency. Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Cole, do we have any data like that where, let's say, those ratepayers voluntarily share why either they refuse to pay or don't want to pay or visions?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have, you know, a customer service system, and the customer service representatives will, you know, track. And I think, you know, when they get to a payment plan or something like that, there's probably a more in-depth conversation that goes on. I'm not sure that they're documenting the reasons behind it. I could follow up with Kathleen and just understand. I'm sure it's very kind of case by case, but more focused on the resolution than the reason necessarily why.
I'm looking for an email because she, I don't know if you'd spoken to Kathleen directly or she, your question was passed on to her. And I know she sent me an email
I believe I reached out to Eric Campbell, but it wasn't anything a direct request. It was just a casual conversation. I was under the impression that Kearns West could potentially provide us with some idea here. But coming back on schedule and on the road here. So it's my understanding that Kearns West was able to identify pockets of communities. And identify those communities, and then your team will work with Kearns West to build a guide or pamphlets, and that those will be handed out by agency staff that are familiar with those communities. Is that correct?
The guide that they're going to help us with is an internal training piece to help us all learn to create consistent outreach and education efforts across the board. So whether Matt Dickens is doing something on this plan that has to be developed, or Water Resources is, or Customer Care has an outreach effort, it's going to be a training effort for all of us to learn to cement the principles of outreach to disadvantaged communities and underrepresented communities, and build in the tools that we should be using each time to make sure that we reach them. That will include like a contact list and other things, but it's kind of a best practices and training document for internal use.
Okay.
And it's going forward.
And what kind of outcome? How will we be able to measure our success?
The guide itself will be used in all of our outreach and engagement efforts. And so my expectation is that after we conduct efforts following those best practices, that we will see an increase in participation from some of these communities that we're not seeing right now.
Participation via email requests or joining our committee meetings or participating in our gardening classes? Are those?
I think it's more, it could be some of those, but it could be participation in rebate programs
or conservation,
you know, conservation efforts, or just how many people come up and talk to us at an event that we haven't been at before, and that face-to-face communication with them and building those relationships. This is a lot about relationship building, so there may not be an immediate, you know, we did X, thus Y and Z have happened. And so we're kind of on the ground floor of this.
Okay. How does the board feel? Consent count? No, but
I was going to say, I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on what we were talking about. I think I read in the report about how there is some mistrust in some of the communities, right, that was brought up. And it also brought me back to one of the sessions that I attended at Aqua, where there was a gentleman from, I believe it was San Francisco, who was talking about how when they realize that to reach a certain audience, they have to put their ads in a certain place or in a certain way, because the Chinese population there didn't read the conventional thing, or they weren't on Facebook like a lot of us are. And so they had to find the channels that they were participating in and advertise to them. And slowly, over time, it builds confidence, because when you meet somebody where they are, where they're comfortable, they're like, oh, I guess you are, like, there's a place for me and it's a little bit more welcoming and they understand that there's a dialogue in a place where they're comfortable and familiar with, because they're not really necessarily looking for the information. They don't even, sometimes people aren't even aware that that information exists unless you put it in their corner in a venue that they're used to, that they attend. I mean, some people, it's just like some people are more on Twitter, some people are more on Instagram, some people are more on Facebook. There's people that are on different platforms.
Some of them prefer a printed flyer at their neighborhood grocery store as one of the things.
I mean, I'm sure, and beyond that too, I'm sure there's also like, you know, either veterans or older people that are on a fixed income that aren't exposed to certain things that need to be addressed in a more specific, in a different way. I think it's just about building those little communities and letting the, and addressing each community in the way that works for them to create more of an engagement and a trust that, hey, we're here, we're talking your language, you know, kind of thing. And to bring them in, and hopefully we'll get more conservation. I think that with the drought coming around, I think a lot of more people are trying to do, but they don't really understand. I had an argument with my gardener the other day until I pulled out Matt Dickens, sent me something in Spanish. I was like, here, just read, and then we can talk. Because there was a lack of understanding, even though he does speak English, there was still a gap, but just being able to give him that brochure from Mr. Dickens, he was like, oh, okay. And then he wasn't fighting me anymore about me wanting to reduce the minutes of my watering.
Director Kelly, you're our unofficial veteran on this board. How would our veterans in South Korea would like to receive these messages? Is there any distinction or between a veteran and non-veteran?
Well, I think we have to be careful. You know, we were just talking about the ability to pay bills and share costs. And you can have, you know, an entire block in Valencia that's an up part of town associated as a dysfunctional or a organization that can't pay its bills. When it comes to the veterans, there's approximately 14,000 veterans in our community, of which there's really only about 3,500 that step up to where they either want to do volunteerism or they want to get involved with giving back or need some help. So you can't just associate the word veteran with you know, a communication gap or the need for certain communication. We've got a tremendous amount of veterans in here that are, you know, 100,000 plus in their own income plus family income. And the other veterans are seniors and Social Security and pensions and things of that nature. So I think Kathy was right about you have to find that little niche on how to communicate with them. But you can't just group them all in as veterans or senior citizens or people that can't pay their bill at any one specific time.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with that. Okay, any other comments or questions? Okay, so are we looking for a consent or action?
I'd say put it on consent and they can pull it if they want.
Okay, let's put it on consent.
Thank you, Austin.
Okay. We are going to move on to item six now. Communications management activities. Ms. Martin.
So on this item, I typically don't have an oral report unless there's something that just really stood out that I want to highlight or if anybody has any questions. Instead, those are mostly just provided on a monthly basis as reference as to the status of sponsorships, legislative tracking, grants, and quarterly also social media reporting.
And public comments?
Yeah.
We'll come up to the committee.
Thank you for the presentation.
Very clear. Yeah, certainly appreciate all the detail and the table. You can quickly look up what's been approved or not, cost of application. Please continue with this format. I think the whole committee agrees, right?
Yeah.
All right. I do have a question on item 6.3 regarding Aqua Region 8 and August event. Mr. Cole, are we sending any staff to that that conference?
Yeah, anybody's been signed up. I know.
Staff going, Bill Cooper's.
Yeah, typically, Director Cooper is highly involved, and I was going to attend, but I'm not. I am not available to attend. But we do send these around to internal staff. So if somebody's interested and they raise their hand, yes, generally we will send.
Yeah, I'm going to attend. I think anybody.
I'll definitely attend as well. I'm just wondering if any of the staff will be attending with us.
I haven't heard of anybody specifically. It is a band.
Can you let me, or Ms. Martin, can you let me know if any of the staff attend? So,
sure.
Okay. And then the same thing with Urban Water Institute. I am unfortunately not able to attend. Any of the staff attending that one?
Generally, General Manager Stone is a big attender of that specific function. So, I don't think he's missed lately. I think he's still on the board of that conference and institute.
Okay.
He may have been.
Mr. Stone, or your tech mind, he's probably hold on. Yeah.
He
would
have been.
Right on page 221, agenda planning for POL. It's the August 18th, 2022 committee meeting. Tour of agency's new website. Definitely looking forward to that.
Me too. Fingers crossed. Thank you. We'll be ready by then.
Jonathan, are we going to be ready?
Yeah, we are ready.
I hope you to it.
IT is not involved in the process at this point. They did all help us all with our foundation. It's my team and our consultant. We're just finalizing the content migration right now. So.
Okay.
Exciting.
Fingers crossed. And then on page 222, January 19th, item number two, discussion of the 2023 legislative platform and advocacy process. This is just for myself and I guess new members in the committee. We do this annually or twice a year?
Annually, where we bring you a platform. We have 11 different priorities that we set for the year for our legislative advocacy efforts that we discuss and revise as we get each year.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from committee members? Public comments? Okay. All right, so this leads to item 7, adjournment. And we will adjourn this public outreach and legislative committee meeting in memory of Vice President Jerry Gladner. Jerry, may rest in peace. Thank you, everyone.
Good job. Good job. Thank you, too.